filmmaking world and the movie-going public were shaken with the tragic and untimely death of Chadwick Boseman. As an actor, Boseman was celebrated for his many powerful portrayals of historic figures and rich characters, but it was his role of King T'Challa, aka the Black Panther, that would make him a worldwide star and a cultural icon. With his passing, one of the big questions that followed was how they carry on the franchise that he helped make a billion-dollar phenomenon. What would that story even be? How could the filmmakers and actors honor the legacy of an immense talent like Boseman? For director Ryan Coogler, the cast, and crew, the answer, it seems, was simple. Tell the story they've been living the last few years. So join us on this episode of Script to Screen as we sit down to discuss Black Panther: Wakanda Forever.
Welcome back to this fine edition of Scripture Screen. I am one of your co-hosts, Chris Kitchen, alongside my other co-host, Zach Strachman.
That's me.
Zach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, it seems I'm having a fun time trying to talk.
That's okay.
Today,
as we all like to have fun.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call this fun. I'm just trying to manifest voice in the English language right now.
That's good. You know, voice is good for this show that we do, this script or screen, your number one source for trusting our legacies to those we leave behind. We're here, back again, back at it with the MCU, but it's a special MCU edition, because this was a big one. This was a big one that, you know, I think a lot of people had a lot of big emotions going into it. It was Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, you remember, I think we talked a little bit on the podcast when we watched the first trailer for it, or that when we were about to go see the first trailer for it. Do you remember or no?
Yes. Oh, man. I still remember seeing that first trailer and just being like, damn, this is really going to be something. And
yeah, especially because none of us knew what the hell they were going to do.
Yeah, that was the big question kind of looming over the series and the cast and the crew and what would happen. I know there were like a lot of big questions of like, do they recast T'Challa? Do they just stop making Black Panther movies? Do they like what is the correct solution? And I think, you know, not to get too far ahead, I think they nailed it. But Chris, where can our lovely listeners find all of our Scripture Screen stuff?
Scripture Screen stuff is conveniently located at our website, www.scripturescreen.com. There, they can find all of our past, present, and future episodes hosted by our wonderful host, anchor.fm. And our link is /scripturescreen. We're on all the platforms. And if they want to follow us on social media, check out our Instagram. Check out our Facebook. And Zach, is that a Green Lantern ring I see you sporting right now?
No, of course not. This is a Marvel episode we're doing. This is...
It's your Wakandan.
Yeah, exactly. It's Vibranium.
Vibranium. Yeah, that's what that is. Find us on the socials. Share us with your friends. You know.
Can I tell you, one of the... So, like, everything surrounding this movie, I think, needed to really be handled with a bit of care and a consideration that you wouldn't afford most other movies. And I've seen some articles online that are risking being insensitive, I think, by some of their... So, like, I saw one, and I don't know which... I forget what website this was, but it was like, oh, the biggest questions we have after Wakanda Forever. And we're... Before... I'm not going to get into big spoilers, but it started, you know, it talked about how a certain event in the movie being linked to vibranium poisoning. And I was thinking, like, can we just not start trying to come up with reasons for certain actors not appearing in this film and just let it, you know, just not make an in-universe excuse to a real tragic event that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. We don't need to come up with a nerdy explanation for an actor's untimely departure from this mortal coil. And so, yeah, I just think some people have not treated this, I feel, with the most respect. But for the most part, I think it's been handled pretty well.
I would say that's more like the media's fault and like just maybe some of the, I don't want to say fan reaction, but like, you know, that's what certain websites have to do to stay relevant is to like kind of start certain conversations about things that are likely less important than, let's say, just the fact that we got the film in general and that, you know, they still found a way to make a solid story is all we should be happy for right now.
For sure.
If anything. And also, you know, the fun and really nice like tribute that they gave us because
absolutely,
you know, there was a great in this that still had some honoring left to do.
Yes.
At any rate,
I think what we're going to do is our usual non-spoiler section, then spoilers, full-on spoilers for Wakanda Forever. A lot of people have seen this movie, so I don't think we'll need to take long with our non-spoiler section. But just in case, if you have not watched the movie yet, we will let you know how we feel about it without ruining any of the big reveals that come along the way. But before that, Chris, do you have perhaps a synopsis?
I do have a synopsis for Black Panther Wakanda Forever. In Marvel Studios' Black Panther Wakanda Forever, Queen Ramonda, Shuri, M'Baku, Okoye, and the Dora Milaje fight to protect their nation from intervening world powers in the wake of King T'Challa's death. As the Wakandans strive to embrace their next chapter, the heroes must band together with the help of the war dog, Nakia, and Everett Ross, and forge a new path for the kingdom of Wakanda. I don't know if I would call Nakia a war dog.
Well, that's like what she was in the first movie.
I thought she was like kind of a spy.
No, I'm pretty sure she was just a full-on spy. I don't know. Let's talk about this, the crew, cast and crew, and then we'll dig into our non-spoiler thoughts. So, this film, like the one before it, was directed by Ryan Coogler, who also worked on the screenplay with Joe Robert Cole. Cinematography by Autumn Durald Arkapaw. Edited by Michael P. Shaver, Kelly Dixon, and Jennifer Lame. Music by Ludwig Göransson. It was released on November 11th, 2022, so hasn't even been 2 weeks from when we were recording this. Runtime of 161 minutes, so it's a beefy boy of a MCU film with a budget of $250 million and, as of today, a box office total of $546.3 million.
I do want to kind of say or kind of just bring to light our cinematographer of this film,
yes.
Autumn Arkapaw. She actually was the cinematographer for the first season of Loki. So she has some MCU experience coming behind. You know, it's funny, like I didn't Google much about the film,
mm-hmm.
the first go around. But upon, like, when we saw the credits and everything, I realized it wasn't our gentleman that had done the first film. We want to find his name really quick so that I can give the proper credits, if you will. Actually, I'm wrong. It says Rachel Morrison. I thought it was for some reason it was the guy that ended up doing the solo film.
I do know who you're talking about, but the name escapes me. Hold on. Solo
Star Wars Story, and then Bradford Young. I don't know why I thought Bradford Young did the first Black Panther. Did he not? No, he did Arrival.
Fantastic.
Arrival's amazing.
Cinematography.
I mean, I could have sworn he did. Anyways.
Anyway.
I don't want to. All right. You know, I'll give credit where credit's due. Rachel Morrison, good job. She also did Mudbound.
Nice.
That was with Dee Reese. It was nominated.
And so then that brings us to the cast of this film, starting with Letitia Wright as Shuri, Princess Shuri, Lupita Nyong'o as Nakia, Denai Guerrera as Okoye, Winston Duke as M'Baku, Angela Bassett as Queen Ramonda, Dominic Thorne as Riri Williams, Michaela Cole as Aneka, Florence Kasumba back as Io. Last we saw her was in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I don't know how to pronounce this gentleman's name. I hope I don't mess it up. Tanakh Huerta as Namor. Martin Freeman as Agent Everett Ross, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Director Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. And another name that I will not mention yet. But, you know, listen, I would say there's only there aside from the obvious lack of Chadwick Boseman, I think the only other character who did not return, the prominent character, I should say, who did not return from the first film was Daniel Kaluuya. And I believe it was just a scheduling conflict.
I think at the time he was filming Nope. But they did make kind of everybody aware in the film as to why he was absent. So perhaps it gives opportunity for him to return in the future.
Right. So with that being said, let's dip into some brief non-spoiler thoughts. Chris, what did you think about Black Panther Wakanda Forever?
I liked that they definitely didn't beat around the bush as to how they were going to continue the franchise. Not that it's a spoiler or anything, but you learn very early on in the film kind of what happens,
mm-hmm.
Which I think was an appropriate response, because for them to, I guess, kind of prolong it or anything, at this point, the film had been released at, you know, now almost a little over 2 years since Boseman's passing. And so I just like that they kind of like gave us like the same kind of shock that, you know, in a sense, we're almost reliving it. And so it puts you back in that mindset of like, okay, it's not just, you know, we're lost and we've moved on and you know, we've all been consoled. But like, you know, what about the characters and this story that we've left behind all that time ago? Like we're brought back to that. And so getting put back in that mindset and then watching all the characters of Wakanda go through their own struggles, I felt like was a really interesting, and I guess, and you know, also like super like grounded way to tell the story. All the while, Ryan Coogler now has to also introduce brand new characters, mm-hmm. and a new story, and trying to put the MCU in another position, you know, for the future. Of like the whole franchise. And I think for the most part, like I enjoyed all the character development and the storytelling. I really did enjoy the addition of Namor or Namor and the other cultures that the Talokan kind of represent. I definitely really appreciate the way that they adapted it into this story rather than keeping it to what necessarily was in the comics, even though it's not a far off adaptation really, but in an effort to differentiate themselves. And then I think thematically to bring the stories together of these two characters was really well done. I thought the music was fantastic. The costumes, production design, everything, you know, I don't think I had many complaints except for one. We'll get to that, because the thing is like, it's not necessarily, it didn't ruin the movie for me, but it's like, I definitely felt like there was so much good in it that this one portion of the film didn't need to even necessarily exist. It was dumb. And I think, but I think he also knew that. And I think it was the reason why it was the most boring series of scenes is because there was a statement being said there, and that's okay.
Okay. Well, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I thought it was a very well-made film. It accomplished a lot of very challenging tasks it had to do, and it was very reverent of Chadwick Boseman and his legacy and the kind of world he helped create. I don't know, man. I don't think we have much we can really say non-spoilery. I think we can just jump right into full
spoilers.
You don't
spoilers. Want to spoil anything. You're like, I'm tired of talking.
I have a lot I want to say, but I don't want to, I don't want to beat around the bush. I don't want to be like, well, I liked a character and I liked one scene, but I can't talk about it yet because we haven't hit a timestamp. No, I think we're going full spoilers on the audience. This is your warning. Get out if you haven't seen Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Go see it and come back and listen to this because we're doing it. 3, 2, 1. There's your warning. Get out. So you kind of you alluded to it when you first were talking about your non-spoiler stuff. This movie does not waste any time with catching, I guess, the MCU up to real world status quo circumstances. That's a good word for it. So it opens up and we get this very just kind of sobering scene of like Shuri and the scientists in her lab, like desperately trying to come up with some miracle synthetic cure for T'Challa, who is dying. And we watch them, you know, struggle to figure something out, only for them to receive the news that it is too late. And I don't know about you, but I thought that this was probably the best way they could have started the movie, just in the sense of like, it sets the tone of, we're not gonna beat around the bush, we're not gonna pretend like T'Challa's not here, or that he's just like off on, you know, a mission somewhere. No, it's like, we are embracing the reality of the situation in order to tell a very real emotional story.
Yeah.
And I think what follows with the funeral procession is some very, very powerful visuals.
I like that they kind of, you get to see, you know, the thing about Black Panther that made it so big is that it definitely provided a lot of insight to people like you or I, like to other cultures outside of our own, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I've never been to a formal funeral. I don't know about you. I've never had like a wake that it's, well, I mean, maybe you have. Like, I've never been to one where we all dress in black and, you know, the casket's right there.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my own personal experience. And, you know, I hope to not necessarily go to many, but that is life.
Yes.
But to see that the, like, kind of like the passage and, you know, how they did these ceremonies and what they meant for it, like, you had a lot of, there was a lot of people like cheering. There was like a lot of dances and everything, but it's all kind of more in terms of like celebrating the life that these and the effect that these people had, you know?
For sure. And
I thought that was like an interesting kind of like,
I have always been fascinated by the ideas of other cultures and how they perceive death and the passing of a loved one. I'll plug a great, absolutely fantastic book by Caitlin Doherty called Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematory. It's a fantastic book. And she digs in a lot with other cultures and their funeral rites and their approaches to death and how death is not always a sad thing. Death, it can sometimes be, like you said, a celebration of life.
Like, you see, like, where it affects, like, characters like the Queen and Shuri, and, like, they are still deeply saddened at this loss, and, like, they don't have, like, that physical side of, you know, T'Challa anymore, and, like, that's sad, and also you see how it, like, reflects the people of Wakanda, you know, and I feel like, you know, the fact that we get to kind of go through that, you know, because it's one thing to lose a king versus, mm-hmm. you know, it's one thing to lose, like, a brother or son.
Exactly. You
know? And so, and I, you know, it's funny that, like, this comes, like, to us, I don't know, at least this film comes to us, like, a month after, like, the Queen of England died. And, mm-hmm. well, not to sound insensitive, the Queen of England, I don't really have a connection with her, but, like, there are people that have photos of, like, going to, you know, see and honor her. And I'm like, I guess.
I mean, yeah, just, I mean, too. I think it's really interesting. It really helps develop this culture of Wakanda, which I think was a big thing Ryan Coogler, when he set out to make the sequel, that's what he really wanted to do, was focus on the people and the way of life of Wakanda. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we, going back to Chadwick Boseman's first appearance as the character in, Captain America Civil War, he has the line, you know, in my culture, death is not the end.
Yeah.
It's just another process of, you know, the big, I don't want to say circle of life, but, like, you know, it's just another step along the way.
I really like, I want to go back to that in a moment, because I like how that comes back to bite us in the ass come a certain point of this film. I mean, my surprise, hopefully it was everybody's surprise. But so I like that while we get this conversation of culture and we get to further explore, like, Wakanda. All right, now we have this whole new society and civilization, as the story develops with every other society in the world and, like, major world powers trying to find, like, their own sources for vibranium, and now they have to develop, like, devices to find it. And to everybody's knowledge, for the most part, the only sources were ever located in Wakanda,
right?
Until these devices came
to be. Yeah, and it's crazy because, like, we get that great scene, like, right at the beginning when the people on the ship get caught by the Dora Milaje, and Queen Ramonda is at the, I guess, the United Nations, and she, like, has them walk in with all the French soldiers, and she's like, hey, you guys were trying to steal from us. Don't think that because our king has died that we are vulnerable or that we are weak. And it's a great kind of, like, you know, mic drop moment. But I love it. It is a good setup of, like, you know, these other nations are trying to seize on an opportunity they think has presented itself. And that does...
I was going to say, that doesn't sound very diplomatic, you know, like, no, I think it's... this a country has every right to protect a resource that they are in control of, and especially when you're in things like United Nations, and you have, like, I don't know, there's very, like, I would say there's a lot of poignant thoughts poked at, at, let's say, real world society.
Right, and, talking about... other sources of vibranium and other cultures, we are introduced to this other seafaring vessel that is investigating some, you know, an untapped vibranium vein, and in the middle of the ocean. And we get, and I don't know how you feel about this, but when we were watching this, we saw this movie together, in one of the few showings that had enough seats for us all to go. Because this movie, I mean, it was packed. And, but I don't know about you, but when we were seeing it, I thought that this first scene where we are introduced to the antagonists of this film, namely the Talokan, or the people of Talokan, this scene was legitimately scary.
Yeah.
Like, the pitch black ocean, the silence, and then creepy mermaid songs and just lone people just floating.
I was gonna say the siren pieces. What was the interesting thing was, like, some of their design, I didn't expect them to be blue.
Yeah.
I then thought about it for a minute, Zach, and I realized why that was.
Please.
Think about it.
Tell me.
Think about
Avatar.
I definitely thought of Avatar when I first saw this. I'm like, Disney's trying to, like, kill this. Like, they're trying to, like, really overdo.
Well,
like,
they own
saturate.
It now.
Yeah, they own it, but, like, they're really trying to, like, go through all this. I thought to myself, I'm like, wait, you know, like, what happens when we lack oxygen, like, from the air, dude? Like, we get pale, like, we turn blue, you know?
Science.
And the thing is, I think there's more of a scientific reason as to, like, oh, they should actually be blue if they're only getting oxygen through the water and, like, not through the air. And I'm like, that kind of makes a little sense.
You could be onto something. You never know.
So when I realized that detail, I was like, oh, that's actually makes this even cooler.
Yeah. And, but just, like, you know, listen, I think I said it to you in the movie theater, but if I was, like, on a ship at night and I just heard someone singing and I looked off the ship and just, it was a random person in the middle of the ocean, just, you know, treading water and singing, I'd be like, nope, I'm leaving. I'm getting on the nearest lifeboat and I am leaving. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't pay me enough money to stay on that ship.
But I don't know if it was the best situation that happened, especially, like, yeah, this whole siren song. This film was definitely a lot more violent, I felt, at times than I realized it was going to be. Not necessarily that that's a bad thing.
No,
but
it's quite effective.
It is, yeah, it's very effective. I don't know why, dude. I feel like this year I've just been battling the ratings of the MPAA. I'm like, how is this getting away at this rating? Like,
sometimes they can really push the envelope. Let me tell you, that siren song, how it just makes people, like, I don't know, commit suicide.
It kind of reminds you of what was that film, The Happening, I think?
Oh, God.
Mark Wahlberg.
Much better than The Happening.
Right. I mean, at least.
No, a million times better.
I only remember watching that movie once.
God,
I shall not defend that film.
It's only worth watching just to laugh at it because it's, like, amazingly bad. But everything with the, like, when the divers are underwater in their suits and, like, one of them's, like, their, like, equipment's malfunctioning and then they're like, we're not getting a reading from the other guy, and it's like, turns around. They're just gone, and you're just like, that person's dead.
Well, then, not to mention too, like, when I was gonna say, yeah, like that whole scene of them being underwater, like in the tanks with the CIA, not fun. That is not a good look for these scientists. These poor people.
There is what's the word for? Hold on, I'm gonna do a quick Google.
He's quick Googling.
Oh, no. There's
a silence.
hold on. I have to find... I forget the name for it. I don't know if it's the... No, it's not thalassophobia. It is the fear of, like, just the depth and just, like, the unfathomable depth in, like, of the ocean. You know what I mean?
I want to say, like, the root of that is just, like, the fear of not being able to fathom something in general.
No, it's specifically, like, for me, like, it's that thing of, like, being in the ocean and, like, having something massive just come up.
Yeah.
If you've ever played the video game Subnautica, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's, like, the most terrifying game ever.
I don't know that I've ever heard of this game.
Oh, my God. It's like a survival sim, but you're on an ocean planet. And there's just these chasms, and you're just like, it's fun, but I am not gonna play that game because I need to sleep at night.
Right.
But that's what, like, the whole thing with the Talokan, just like that shit, like, awoke something in me that I was just like, I like, just give them the planet they won already.
Yeah. So. This is interesting. This brings us to a fun point in the film once we realize, okay, people are looking for vibranium. People are mourning the loss of the king. new character introduced. Where are all of our characters kind of at right now, Zach? Let's kind of go and talk. You want to talk some characters? You want to kind of keep developing?
We can talk characters, because, I mean, I think, like, yeah, we've established there's, like, you know, the kind of through line of the film is this, like, this feud between the Wakandans and the Talokan. So
the Wakandans in the world, too. People think that Wakanda's up to no good because they're trying to protect vibranium from everybody, but apparently Wakanda's not the only vibranium-filled society anymore.
And because of that, it's leading to a lot of this one culture that kind of went undisturbed for many, 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 many years suddenly is being
disturbed.
And, you know, it calls to light a lot of those same themes we saw in the first Black Panther, the idea of, like, isolationism and just, you know, invasion of someone's outsiders into someone's culture and stuff.
Say colonialism?
Colonialism.
I would say we even got almost a very explicit view of that account. In the film, which was I thought was super interesting. Like,
yeah, for sure. But let's talk the characters who kind of inhabit this story. Starting with Shuri, it's kind of her film.
It is her film.
It's her film. I think it's like half her film, half like Namor's.
Yeah.
Film, but Shuri, I think everyone kind of rightfully assumed she would take on the mantle of the Black Panther. It's like the obvious.
Don't know that it mattered, like, as a question. Like, what, like, if the guy was, I mean, that this was what you were saying in the beginning of the film, like, why was this a question to begin with? Like, why is that what we're so focused on? Let's just see what they're gonna do,
right?
And, like,
you know. But I like that they tied it into Shuri's character because, you know, she is not mourning well.
No.
Because she's letting just the despair get to her, and she isn't giving herself time to just heal. You know, she has that nice scene with Ramonda where they go out into nature and they are going to have this, like, this fire, and they're going to burn their funeral garb. And it's a way to kind of say, I am done with this part of my grieving process, and now I'm going to start working toward healing.
Yeah.
And she can't do it. And it's a very, you know, we see many times throughout the film that just the idea of trying to heal and trying to come back from such a massive loss, that terrifies Shuri.
Yeah. But also, and, like, I like how, you know, where we get, like, that, I don't know, I feel like Angela Bassett in this film, like, had a bigger role to play than in the first one.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And I really like that as well. One, because I'm a fan of hers. And two, because the queen, we already got to see her be, like, the strong political type at the UN meeting and in that area. But now we get to see her, like, as a mother, not just as, like, a, you know, like, really, like, as, you know, the chief guiding character in anybody's lives is, like, our parents, right? They brought us in. You know, they say they could take us out. I don't know if that's true. I've been telling my mom that for years. But that's the thing, like, to have that moment, like, we didn't ever get to see that with, like, necessarily Chadwick and
Angel
Bass in the last
one. Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, they had their moments and stuff. There's a nice moment in this film where they do a callback to the first one, because, like, in the first one, it's when T'Challa and M'Baku are having their battle, their duel for Challenge Day, and as T'Challa is being overpowered, Ramonda shouts, you know, show them who you are, and that's when he is able to, like overpower M'Baku, and we get a callback to that toward the end of this film as Shuri and Namor are tearing each other apart, and Shuri flashes to Ramonda in the ancestral realm, and she says, you know, show them who you are. And it's, I thought it was a great moment, a great thing of like, you know, this is a nice thing that is kind of a through line that has been drawn through this family.
If you think about it, it makes like a nice kind of comparison or rather like a contrast from like that, like mother-daughter relationship versus like, you know, T'Challa's and the Queen's relationship as well. Like, and then if you look at like this last year when we were watching Kamala Khan, mm-hmm. and her relationship with her mother,
yeah.
like it was still very different. Different, you know. I don't think we got to really receive of those kinds of stories. Not even in Black Widow that I feel like we get that kind of story.
It's funny because like MCU, I feel like they get a bad rap of like a lot of daddy issues in the MCU films, but then like all the moms like are always just super supportive and super.
What I mean to say is like, I mean, in the case of Ms. Marvel, that wasn't the case for the first half of the show. And it was more of like a typical, like there was a little bit of rebellion against the mom and the dad.
Sure.
The mom
sure.
was more of a prominent character versus like this one, like her mom, you know, like that she was in full force ready to support her. But like, you know, Shuri still didn't feel like she had like that level of confidence. It's just nice to kind of see that. It's very ground, like this film, like at its core, still like very grounded themes, like throughout everything, which is why I feel like I liked it like that much more.
Yeah. And then we have like Nakia, who in her own way kind of, you know, she's distanced herself from Wakanda. She's off in Haiti and she's helping people with the Wakandan outreach.
She didn't even come up in the film until like at what point. Like,
yeah, it's after they had you know, gotten, I believe it's when they have gotten Riri Williams,
yeah.
Who is fun in the movie. She's cool. She's kind of like a wild card in this film. She's almost like a human MacGuffin, because like the Namor wants to kill her because she created the vibranium sensing equipment, and is that why they go see Nakia? For her help. But
in finding this girl?
No, or it's either finding the girl or protecting her. But obviously, great to have Lupita Nyong'o back. Again, I feel like she is dealing with the loss of T'Challa in her own way, which we'll get to that big reveal in a little bit. But yeah, and then, you know, I feel like there's some characters that are very stable, very, like, they're grieving in a healthy way, which mm-hmm. is, like, Okoye and M'Baku, who they understand, like, it's rough, but they, I think, are the most, like, well-adjusted out of the cast in terms of
yeah.
dealing with the loss.
You know, it's interesting, like, you know, so, to kind of go back and make, like, a quick adjustment, it was, like, Okoye who went with Shuri to go find yes. Riri Williams, but like, and so when Okoye was like stripped of her title, that like they seek out Nakia. So like, I would
yes.
say,
okay.
honestly,
okay, yes.
Okoye goes through so much character development of her own in this film, and she gets, I mean, she also gets a couple one-liners. You know, the
yeah.
whole thing about the suit. Like, she has a lot of funny interactions in this. I don't know.
Yeah,
she's pretty solid.
I gotta say, I don't know how I feel about just visually the suit she got.
For sure looked like something out of Power Rangers.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, I think that the Dora Milaje look awesome just in their usual uniform.
Yeah.
I like, even, you know, I love their song, their theme song, their leitmotif of like the Dora Milaje like battle music. I've always
yeah.
liked that. So I don't know if I needed them to have like a crazy, like, you know, power armor costume. Hopefully, you know, if they keep up with it in later films, they kind of streamline it a bit. But you know, whatever. Riri Williams, like I said, pretty fun. But let's talk Let's talk about this film's main antagonist, Namor, the Submariner.
First off, I really, really, really like how this character, this actor, this performance of Namor. I like the overall introduction where he's like, they call me, I don't even know what they call him. They call him like the god of something.
Kukulkan.
But when Namor starts talking, he's like, and then they shorten it to like the boy without love. So it's Namor, Noah Moore. And I'm like, oh, like that's cool. Like, I don't know. The fact that they kind of tied it all into like kind of Meso and like old Mayan culture and everything, dude, into it 100%. They showed the flashbacks of them being colonized. And I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, the whole thing with Namor and grounding him in a real world like culture, especially one that like has a lot of like very vibrant aesthetic, I thought was a very inspired idea, because Namor, as he is in the comics, is just a dude in a Speedo.
Yeah, and he's basically Aquaman.
But, like, it's no one's fault. Like, he was, like, one of the first, like, comic book characters back before Marvel was even Marvel, when they were timely comics. So it's like, you know, that was back, you know, he was in the era of, like, Namor and the Human Torch and Captain America, you know? So I totally get and appreciate that they were like, we're going to take this character, we're going to strip him down to like the barest details, and we're going to build him back up as like this tragic villain and give him a real, like, you know, imposing just personality, and make his culture just super fascinating to get into. Like you said, a lot of stuff about, you know, colonizing, and a lot of like cultural stuff with like the language that went into his name, which was really fascinating. And just everything about it. Riding on fucking whales. Are you kidding? That's the coolest shit ever. Like, I feel like Aquaman kind of went a very silly route with its, like, Atlantis, where it's, like, it's very cartoonish, and, like, they ride around on, you know, giant seahorses,
right?
And there's octopi who play drums and stuff, and I'm like,
very Little Mermaid.
Yeah. I dug this whole, like, Talokan vibe so much more.
I think the fact that they went and, like, tried to piece together, like, old, like, you know, Mayan languages. I actually Googled it. They said that they tried to piece together, like, about 18 of the languages. Because, I mean, the unfortunate truth is that these are languages that have been dead.
Yeah.
And, like, not unspoken for years. Like, hundreds of years. Thousands of years. Not thousands. Hundreds. Because they only got conquered in, you know, 1,000 years ago.
So, more, yeah,
less. But the thing is like the reaction to the culture and the characters was the same in Wakanda, like, and which kind of emulates that of real life. Like, when people think about like how all these, you know, you have like in Mesopotamia, you have in Egypt, you have in Mexico, all these pyramids that were built around the same time, you know, like, and like, so people obviously thought very similarly about certain ideas that, you know, it's very humanizing. Now, this is interesting. The actor, Tenochtitl, he had to learn these languages or piece them together, as opposed to, like, he's, you know, a Spanish speaker, right?
Yeah.
Also, his English as well. Like, what's interesting to me is, like, you know, that they didn't try to... I mean, you could see where they had to do additional ADR.
Right.
But, like, I really liked that they got to implement, like, this other Mayan language. It's not even Spanish. Instead, I'm like, oh, this guy, like, he speaks Spanish. Like, you're going to have him do that? Like, no. And also, he had to learn how to swim for this role, too, dude. Like, he talked about it in this interview, and it's insane that, like, he was, one, probably, the fittest guy in the entire film.
Dude, that looked great.
All,
he looked
all his scenes.
Awesome. By the way, did you see that Disney had to like digitally like lower the size of his bulge?
Oh, I did. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Because he's just got a fucking like hammer.
Man's well endowed. Yeah, or his underwear's real on really tight.
And Disney was like, this is a PG-13 film.
Yeah, sorry, dude. This isn't hosted by the PH. You know what I'm saying? This is honestly, I thought as a performer, he's excellent. I don't know. I haven't watched Narcos Mexico, and I know he's in that. And
oh,
I haven't
nice. Been
in, like I haven't seen him in a lot of the other roles, but I really like his introduction here.
I'm excited to see where his character goes from here, because obviously this movie ends him in a very, you know, like he's not a villain anymore.
They're definitely taking the anti-hero approach, because that's the word that's in all the headlines and everything. Like, they're using that to the T. You know what I blame? I blame 5-10 years ago, this whole obsession with Deadpool and everything, and everybody's calling everybody anti-hero. I am even at fault to it at one point, because there was one point I was like, oh yeah, Red Hood, anti-hero. He's the coolest. and anything that was anti-hero was everywhere, and now here we are reaping what we sowed.
Well,
that's what we get.
That being said, I mean, I just think I'm really excited to see where they take his character now, because, like, obviously, I'm sure he's going to get his own film, and I'm sure it's going to be awesome. I just thought everything about his character was great. You want to talk about music? You want to talk about Ludwig Göransson's music?
Dude.
The track of Namor's Throne, I have listened to it about 100 times since seeing the film, because it was, I remember being in the theater just being like, holy shit.
It was solid.
This fucking song, it was like some, like, almost like, I don't want to say like Godzilla music, but it was like, you know, this lumbering, looming, just intense sound. And I'm just like, ah, it's fantastic. And just everything about the Talokan, how they looked, how they fought, how they just, you know, they have these like breathing apparatuses.
Very Dune, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Namor, he has the little wings on his ankles.
That I was a little less of a fan of, but only because I'm so unfamiliar with Namor or Namor as a character, like in the comic books.
Yeah, but he's always had the wings.
That I didn't even know. I was like, that's a weird, like when they described it in the film about, like, you know, like that was his mutation. Well, I mean, one, they use the word mutant.
Mutants.
And they confirmed it, like, mutants are a thing, and they're very much involved in, like, this is interesting.
Yep.
Like, and also, he talks about his evolution. And I want to touch on that as, like, a
and
story
if I,
element.
If I remember correctly, doesn't Shuri, like, ripped one of those feet wings off, right?
Yeah, dude. She looked like it hurt.
Yeah.
That looked ugly as hell. I'm telling you, this movie was violent.
When I tell you, man, like, it's funny, I'm just, like, Googling pictures of Namor, and there's, like, these, like, old, like, pictures of, like, what people thought Namor would look like, and it was, like, a really bad, like, take on Jason Momoa's Aquaman costume, but, like, black and stuff instead of, like, gold, because it's like, ooh, we're gonna do something different. But I love that they said, no, we're doing Namor, we're doing him like how he looks in the comics for the most part, and we're gonna throw on some just awesome jewelry. And
I was gonna say, how does he look in the comics?
He just rocks the Speedo, dude. Rocks the Speedo and the wings on his ankles.
Oh, that is it. Oh, but it fits.
No, it's great. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And also, I like how they kind of make note that, like, you know, the rest of his garb was, like, also vibranium, like, jade material. I think I read an interview with, like, the production designer that, like, that was the color that, I mean, because of the green kind of symbols, she, like, said, oh, yeah, that would be a good identifier. And it fucking worked perfectly.
Yeah.
I don't know if in reality that would make like great armor or not, but if it's made of vibranium, okay, I'll give it a break.
And then I just also like, I don't know about you, but like whenever they do flying in films, especially if it's like a human, if it's like a real person, I feel like a lot of times flying can come across as like kind of hokey looking, with like compositing. And usually whenever it's not an actual physical person, if it's like someone who's like in a CGI Iron Man suit,
yeah,
it doesn't look bad. But when it's like you can actually see a person flying, I feel like sometimes I get taken out of it. But I never
You know where I really liked it of all places?
Where?
Is like when I think about Zack Snyder's Superman.
Okay. I think he also had, you know, listen, say what you will about Zack Snyder, the man's a visual, he's got a visual eye for these things, so I totally get that. Like, he would make that stuff look good. But I'm talking like when it's Namor and he's just a guy, you know, and he's a human looking person, and seeing him zip through the skies and stuff, I was like, never once was I like, ah, oh, that doesn't look good. I was like, I buy it. This friggin' awesome.
I think the one point where like they're, I think it was like when they were on that bridge and the car flipped over in Boston, which by the way, they went to Boston. They gave MIT like the time of day. Okay. I think that was at the only moment. Also, did you notice the product placement for Toyota in this film? We're going to get, it was specifically associated with one character. They kept showing the 4Runner. I'm like, this is a very first for MCU history, guys. There was a lot of it.
Listen, everyone likes to joke around about like the Baskin Robbins in Ant-Man, but it's like, this is just product placement. It's just really in your face product placement.
Yeah. At one point, I think they were all about like Samsung or Verizon phones. Actually, in Iron Man, it was the Verizon phones. I don't know if you remember like the one that like went sideways.
Oh, okay.
Like, I remember when that phone came out, it was really big.
Nice.
That was like predates like modern Androids and stuff. Just because it had a cool Switch thing. Anyways, I want to go back and kind of talk about Riri Williams, because there was, I think you sent me an article at one point about like, or like, it's like a video title about her character, and it was somebody asking like why it felt like why it felt like she wasn't
like they're like, she was more of a plot device than a character in this film. And for one, no.
And it's like, she definitely had her own like characterization at some point. Like, we're discovering about this character, and and Ryan Coogler does talk about like she is kind of like the foil to Shuri. Like, they have a lot in common, but then there's also like exceptionally different in just like the way they were, like their roles to each other. Like, they're both supposed to be scientists, like they are, but it's just also the way that they handle situations, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, like, at the end of the day, listen, it was great to have Riri Williams in this. I'm excited for the Ironheart show.
I kind of am happy to see, like, the whole face in the suit head again. Yeah, like, that was a fun piece of imagery. It's like, oh, I haven't seen that in, like, 4 or 5 movies. I guess it's been a little more. When was 2019? 3 years ago now?
God. But, listen, I'm going to be very excited for Ironheart when it comes out. It should be a great show. And I think she did a great job. But like, when people are like, well, they didn't really give her a full character arc, and you know, she didn't really like have like much growth, I'm like, it's not her movie.
Yeah, she'll get more development and everything.
The movie is not Black Panther and also Riri Williams. It's Black Panther Wakanda Forever. It's about the people of Wakanda, the one guy who is attacking Wakanda, and then a few other kind of ancillary characters who probably shouldn't have been in the movie. Segue.
Now, I was going to say, you want to talk about plot devices? Because I got a device. I got a fucking tool we could talk about. His name's fucking Everett Ross.
Martin Freeman.
I love him, and I now understand that he's familiar with this franchise and everything, but like, they focused a lot on his nonsense.
Also,
and also Allegra DeFontaine, whatever the hell her name is.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Like, I don't care that they used to be married. That's not the kind of reveal I needed in this film.
Was, like, I felt like a lot of stuff with her character in all of her appearances.
Also,
so
the
far.
New director of the CIA. Like, when the fuck has that? When has the CIA ever been a relevant organization
also,
in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Does Everett Ross have any relation to Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross?
Oh my God, what if that comes out to be a thing?
Or is this just like a Martha situation where it's like, oh, look at this funny coincidence. Nobody cares.
I think maybe when we get Secret Invasion, we'll get that explored.
Or Thunderbolts.
Well, wait, I was going to say in the last couple.
Harrison Ford is going to be
Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
Are they going to kill him again too?
I don't know if they're going to kill him, but you think they're going to Red Hulk him?
He's going to die in Indiana Jones. He's going to die.
I don't think they're going to kill him in Indiana Jones.
I think they're going to kill him in Indiana Jones.
You think they're going to kill him in Indiana Jones?
Yeah, I think they're going to kill him in Indiana Jones.
I don't want them to kill
him. I think that's all Harrison Ford wants to end his career by all means necessary. He's ready to retire.
Kill all of his characters.
Yeah, like any character that they want. He's like, dude, he's cashing out. You're going to pay him big because he's earned it.
I just love Harrison Ford. They'll be like, her shot first. Was it Han or Greedo? And he'll be like, fuck you. anyway, so yeah, Everett Ross and Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. Just, you know, listen,
they were the ones riding around in the Forerunners, by the way. Like, yeah. Every single time, it was just right there in your face.
So this movie was almost 3 hours long, and I feel like if they had taken out every piece of scene with them, we would have lost nothing. Because the only thing that their characters do is just, like,
Outside of introduce, like, he is the connection of how they get to Riri Williams.
Sure. Right? But then the rest of his time in the film is just being caught in a, I can't tell the government how the Wakandans know about her.
Yeah, and then also bringing in Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, who, again, I hate that name.
She's just being set up as, like, the Amanda Waller of this.
Is she putting together the Thunderbolts?
Yeah, I think she got U.S. agent and
It took them twice, two go-arounds to make the Suicide Squad a solid film. What makes you think that they're going to get it in the first go-around, Kevin Feige?
I don't know, but I'm also remembering that it was Director Fontaine who sent Yelena after Clint Barton in the Hawkeye series.
Yeah,
so like, I don't really know whose team she's playing for.
Yeah.
But that being said, she hasn't done enough. Like, I get it. She's just kind of like this.
She has too much setup going on, and it's not as exciting as Thanos.
And it's just like the obnoxious attitude is just kind of like.
Here's the thing about Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Josh Brolin.
I like seeing it.
Josh Brolin's was 20 times better.
I like Julia Louis-Dreyfus in other things, but I just think right now the shtick. Yeah, I think the shtick is just not doing it for me in terms of this character. But I'm willing to let it play out and see where it goes. But as of now, I don't think I like this character very much. You know what character I was not surprised to see, but kind of like I was like, they did include this character. Michael B. Jordan.
Dude.
As Eric Killmonger, N'Jaqa.
When she went into the ancestral plane. Oh my God. And that was him sitting. You knew something was weird. I mean, the music and like just the slow creeping of the camera around the throne. Like, and it was fucking Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
He's like, what's up, cuz? What's up, little cousin? I'm like, dude. Like,
and you know what?
That is how you differentiate yourself from the film before. Don't show the same shit. Don't do that. Do some different shit. And
You know what I liked about his appearance is they could have just, like, he was, like, in, like a shirt and jacket and stuff. And they could have really just phoned it home.
They gave him, like, hair and everything. They put him through it all.
You could see on the sets, they still had the scarification that he would do.
Yeah.
For all of his kills. And just like,
The costume and hair and makeup on him was awesome.
And just, you know, him kind of being this devil on Shuri's shoulder.
I like that. I like the fact that, like, it's not like the inspiration, that's where they go to get the inspiration to be the Black Panther and the leader, but it kind of is like that confidence building room.
Yeah.
You just took the thing. And I want to talk about her transition and how we got there. because I fucking called it. As soon as I saw it, I called it. But it was so interesting kind of when he was telling her, like, you know, like, why are you, what brought you in here? Vengeance? Is that why you created the thing? I'm like, dude, like, that is so interesting. The fact that she goes in there and then she comes out and she lies about it. She says it was nothing, like, because it's almost like she feels shameful for feeling that way. Like,
yeah,
dude, that's deep. That's
yeah.
Fucking, that is...
And I it
like,
leads
that's not in... as fucking vanilla as not that the first one was vanilla at all. The first one was like, you know, by all regards, a really big.
The best thing about Killmonger is that, like, at the end of the day, he's a villain, but he's right.
Yeah, that's the thing, dude. That's the
and
thing.
And again, we see that here. It's like, you know, he may not be the person we necessarily want,
or the one we need.
He may not be the one that we want Shuri to be getting her pep talk from, but she definitely needed a pep talk, and he could probably do worse than...
All I'm saying is that, like, I love... That was, like, a really great little twist that they gave us.
And then, and like you said, that leads into Shuri donning... You know, she takes the synthetic heart-shaped herb, and she becomes the Black Panther.
Dude.
And...
Let me tell you what, when we figured out in the beginning of the film, that's what she was trying to do, was she was trying to recreate the herb, like, the whole time, finding out, like, different ways to do it. And then when Namor's backstory was going on, he's talking about, like, the thread from the planet in the water.
Yeah.
It was in the bracelet. I'm, like, thinking to myself, like, wait, if that thing is, like, organic and that's how he got his stuff, like, she's going to fucking use that. And that's how she's going to make that connection. And then when it fucking happened, she took the bracelet and everything. Like, I was like, dude, I didn't say anything to anybody around me. I didn't read anything on the internet, but I called it. And then I looked on the internet. I'm like, what do I call this? It's not called the Chekhov's gun. It's not called the this, that. I don't know what.
It's just setup and payoff.
It was a solid setup and a solid. I really liked the. I mean, it's I'm fantastic. Not saying that. Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed that callback.
And
that detail.
Man, and I love the whole plan, like luring out the Talokan onto the place. Getting Namor in that one ship where they could just, like, dry him out.
That was a really good idea.
And I love that he's, like, he sees that he's being, like, dried out, and he's just like, okay, I'm just gonna destroy this ship. And he just starts stabbing stuff, and immediately Shuri's like, oh, shit. By the way, I love that her Black Panther suit incorporates her gauntlets. That was so
awesome.
Cool. And then just their fight is so brutal.
It's rough.
They beat the piss out of each other.
It was rough to watch, dude.
And, I mean, she gets run through with a spear. He gets one of his little
ankle
wings.
It was like, wait, I don't understand. Like, she alive after that? Like,
she's going to have some serious... She's going to need a bit of a...
I'll tell you what, Tony Stark did get stabbed in the abdomen, and then he, like, nanoed himself back to health, so...
And Shuri's, like, a way better scientist than Tony Stark.
Yeah, I'm sure she could have calculated the whole time travel thing if she were alive.
Oh, if...
And not blipped.
Was she blipped?
Yeah, she was.
Okay.
But, if you look at, like, in
I'm thinking,
Endgame...
No, I'm thinking of Infinity War, where I was like, no, she was there. But I'm like, no, she did, She did get blipped.
She got.
Oh, God. But, and then I love where it all builds to, that it's like, it is finally going to, you know, she's in a position where she can put Namor down. And at the end, at the last moment, she gets that one final kind of those words from Ramonda, beyond the grave. And she... echoes the lines of T'Challa from Civil War, where she says, you know, vengeance is consuming them. I'm done letting it consume me. And, you know, you talk about the legacy of Chadwick Boseman and the legacy of who he was and who T'Challa was, and the passing on the torch and the mantle of Black Panther, and it's like, it fits so well in that moment.
I think it takes a lot of balls, especially in Hollywood today, to not CGI somebody who has passed, because it seems to be the trend that in the last number of years, let's
talk about Paul
Walker and like all these like people, like it, they, anything that they showed of T'Challa and Chadwick, was just footage from like the last film or like just certain areas in, and that was it. And we didn't need any CG. We didn't need a body double, somebody to like be him from behind and we don't see his face. Like we just got like his best moments on screen. Oh, also, I mean, that intro into the film.
Yes. Instead of the fanfare,
it was just him. And yeah, it was really nice, dude.
It was really great. But just seeing her finally, you know, get pushed to the edge, and then choosing in that final moment not to take revenge, but to show compassion. It's like, ah, it's perfect. It's perfect. And she extends him Namor an olive branch. And, you know, she's like, you know what? No, we're going to help you, because we did put you guys in a really bad position.
Mm.
And now we have, you know, potentially an alliance between Wakanda and Talokan. And it's so funny, because, like, you know, back when Endgame came out, and there's this one line that Okoye talks about where she talks about an earthquake in the ocean, and everyone's like, oh, is this going to be set up? And I'm like, I don't think that they're actually going to be bringing in Namor. I was wrong, and I'm glad I was wrong, because by the end of this film, I'm like, it's fantastic. We have like this just rich new character that's introduced, that's ripe for new storytelling potential. It's an X-Men tie-in. It's a like a mutants tie-in and stuff. And we're in an exciting place with the MCU.
I'll tell you what. After I'm trying to think of the last film that came out, was it Multiverse of Madness? No.
Was it Multiverse of Madness? I don't remember.
I mean, we've gotten a lot of shows since then, and the shows have been solid. But, like, in terms of, like, recent, like, this film, easily 20 times better than the last Doctor Strange.
It was Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Thor, Love, and Thunder. Better, easily better than Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Yeah.
You see how easy I was able to forget
Thor? Yeah, exactly.
Thor left, the only person to leave an impression from Thor, and even then it's fleeting and no fault of their own. Excuse me, Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
It's just not relevant anymore. Christian Bale was the only thing worth a damn in that film. It was not, actually, we didn't even talk about this. Did you see, like, Chris Hemsworth is, like, taking a little departure from acting right now?
He says he's predisposed to Alzheimer's.
Yeah, he has the gene.
That's crazy.
That's rough, dude.
I hope it doesn't hit him hard. But going back to Wakanda Forever, getting to have Shuri finally allow herself that grieving process at the end, where she burns the funeral garb, and we have that quiet flashback to all the scenes between her and T'Challa, of them, like, you know, high-fiving and embracing each other and stuff like that. And you're like, wow, this is like way more like visceral and real than like anything you get in the genre today. And it's so real and tangible, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, like, I don't know, this just it's like people talk about, like, oh, we're, it's, you know, when talking about like the DC films, so, like, these are movies for adults because there's killing and violence.
It's very, like, surface level adult themes.
It's not
right?
Adult. It's 13-year-old boy.
It's adult in the sense, like, yeah, maybe a kid shouldn't be watching something that's just filled with gore and, like.
But like, that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm talking, like, you know, Zack Snyder, when he said, I quote, I make my films for grown-ups. Like, he said it like a fucking 12-year-old. But
I don't know about you, Zach, but discussing colonialism and how it's affected other cultures, I would say it's a pretty fucking adult conversation.
This is a very mature movie, and I think
I don't think people realize, like, these things, like, they're fleeting. Like,
I think it's exactly what the MCU needed at this point. because, you know, we had Multiverse of Madness and we had Love and Thunder that were just these just like very cosmic, very out there stories. And we're going to be getting another very cosmic and out there story.
It's just nice to have your feet on the ground once in a while. It's a good closer for the phase. We don't necessarily need like a tie in to, you know, the overarching everything, just because this was closure that, they were trying to give us for a while. And, you know, due to the circumstances of the real world, like we had to wait. They were trying to see how they could provide that. And we got it in a very satisfying way. I think ultimately everybody's happy with it. Listen, like, right. I actually looked it up. Currently the eighth highest grossing film of 2022 right now. I think it'll surely grow more before the end of the year, just because the fact that Thor Love and Thunder is higher than it, I just won't stand for.
Yeah.
So that needs to change.
But this was definitely a very refreshing palate cleanser before we jump into like kind of the next big MCU entry,
which is Bob Iger.
He's back.
He's back.
He's back. He said, surprise, motherfuckers. I'm talking the next big movie, I believe, is Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
Quantumania.
Which is going to be a very CGI-heavy, crazy out there, bizarro film.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited for. I'm very excited to see Jonathan Majors back as Kang.
Yeah, I welcome him. He's probably one of my favorite parts of the new series moving forward. Just since his introduction, I've been a fan.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. And I just, but this was just good. This was a good way of like having like a superhero story, but also telling a very human story and kind of giving us a moment to just catch our breath and reflect on where we are and, you know, pay homage and honor a great actor.
I think so, too.
And before we wrap up, let's talk about that mid-credit scene. Because Nakia shows up with her and T'Challa's son, whose name is also T'Challa.
Yeah.
And I do find myself wondering that now that we are introducing a, you know, across the scope of the MCU now, a villain who is very much tied to time travel, if we aren't going to get a new adult T'Challa sometime in the near future.
I don't know. I feel like that kind of defeats the purpose of, like, us already getting a new Black Panther. You know, like, we don't need another T'Challa. We just got Shuri.
So like, maybe we get a Black Panther 3 where Shuri is the main Black Panther and we have T'Challa as, like, her sidekick?
He's Black Mamba.
Oh, God. But it's interesting, you know,
Is he a character in the comics? Does like T'Challa have a son?
T'Challa does have a son in the comics. I forget his name. T'Challa's son.
That's what I feel like. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like in the grand scheme of things, I'm wondering how his role would play, because I feel like I would like to see more development with Shuri in terms of like where we find her in the scan and in the grand scheme of like the Avengers, right? Now that we know that we're returning to said Avengers, what will that be like? So we'll see. I don't want to count our chickens too soon.
Right.
You know, that's all I can do.
But for now, it's nice. We're here. We have had another fantastic entry in the long MCU machine. And, you know, it's from here on, I think shit's going to get weird.
Yeah, I felt like it was going to get weird. I always knew it was going to. And that's why I try to welcome everything with open arms and try to get excited. But, like, you know, they are doing crazy things. Oh, the next thing we get is, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy holidays.
Oh, yeah. I'm just...
We get that, in a week.
Yeah, I'm not, like... I saw something online. I was, like, kind of, like... I don't know what people think, but it was like James Gunn had posted a thing of like, you know, oh, my favorite Guardian of the Galaxy, Kevin Bacon. And someone in the comments was like, you belong to DC now. Stop posting about Marvel. And he was like, first of all, fuck you.
Yeah.
He didn't say that. He was much more tasteful. But like the sentiment was there.
You know, it is. Let's just say this. DC did welcome him in with open arms.
Listen, I have nothing but the biggest confidence, the greatest confidence in his ability to like create a solid through line for them, because they've been letting.
Let me ask you something. And think about this. Is it too late?
Well, they're based. I think they've basically said they're starting from scratch at this point.
Then what's the point of doing all these other films? I don't know.
Money.
That's just a question for another script or screen episode with a Christopher who feels far more inclined to defend the likes of this company.
That's okay. I guess someone needs to defend them. Anyway, this has been Script or Screen, your number one source for television and movies and witty banter back and forth, and we got Chris this week. Today as we're recording is a Monday, 2 days until the finale to season one of Andor. I believe we will be trying.
Oh my god, did I just miss last week's episode and not even realize?
I don't know, did you,
dude? Oh my god, I'm realizing this as we're recording right now. An episode came out last week and I haven't even seen it.
Ah, well, you should, because it's good.
Dude, I'm so glad I haven't seen anything spoiler related. Anissa, we have something to do. All right. This has been Chris here. I'm here at Script or Screen. I'm going to go watch Andor and get fucking caught up like an asshole. Zach, any last thoughts? Great. Love it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another wonderful edition of Script or Screen. We hope you have a wonderful holiday. Happy Thanksgiving. In the sense that you should enjoy time with your family. Do not colonize.
Yeah, colonizers we do not
advise that. Because that is also saying Thanksgiving does celebrate. For a while, it was taught to celebrate that.
Anyway, so just go have some nice turkey and pumpkin pie and have a good one.
Bye.